I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Yesterday, Governor Larry Hogan signed a bill allocating an additional $23 million to Baltimore City Public Schools. This comes after Mayor Catherine Pugh diverted additional funds to education in her budget. So is it enough to close the $130 million gap and avoid teacher layoffs? We'll get an update from Baltimore City Schools CEO, Dr. Sonia Sondalisis. Then a conversation with activists who use their artistry to empower young people. Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland joins me for Culture Connections, along with the singer-songwriter Navasha Daya, Wendell Patrick, the co-founder of the Baltimore Boom Bap Society, and Stacey Sanders of Young Audiences Arts for Learning. The arts, activism, and education next on Midday, right after these headlines. And good afternoon, everybody. Glad you're with us. I'm Tom Hall. Today on Midday, another installment of Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. We're going to take a look at the status of funding for area schools, and we'll speak to a couple of artists and the head of an education nonprofit that works with city schools and schools around the state. Yesterday, Governor Larry Hogan signed into law a bill that will provide funding for school systems in Maryland that are experiencing declining enrollment. The majority of the funding in that bill will be allocated for Baltimore City Public Schools. That money will be combined with additional school funding from the city announced by Mayor Catherine Pugh last week. So the question is, will this funding be enough to close the $130 million gap that the Baltimore City Public Schools anticipates for next year? For the answer, we turn to Dr. Sonia Sondalisis. She's the president and CEO of the city school system. Dr. Sondalisis, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
So that is the question. I mean, the state looks like they're chipping in about $23.7 million, the city an additional $22 million. If my math is right, that's about $45.7 million. That seems a far cry from $130 million, which is the number that we talked about the last time you were on Midday. Is the problem solved?
Well, I think that we are much further along to solving it, Tom. So a couple of things to point out, that in addition to the figures that you just cited, there are additional services that are working their way through the legislature and that the city has identified. One example of that is legislation around the MTA cost that the district assumes each year to have our students take advantage of public transportation. And if that bill goes through, that would be an additional savings for the school district that would bring us much closer to $30 million than the 24 or 23 that you cited earlier. Similarly, we are in discussion with the city, the mayor's leadership on this. It actually includes a discussion about additional services, for example, nurses that the city is deliberating taking on. And so what that does is also release additional funds that are available for us to return to schools. So that does bring us far closer to, I think it's 59.4, if I remember correctly, from our budget forum, our town hall forum that we held last night. It brings us closer to the 59.4 or 60 million a year in both combined city and state support. The district office, we have through our own scrubbing, looking at our budgeted versus actual, some of our own efficiencies that we've been able to capture this year, and what will probably be still some reductions at Central. We've identified $30 million in projected savings, so it brings us much closer to a $90 million number than just the $24 million that, you know, got a lot of the press. And when you look at the $90 million, one of the things that we announced yesterday is that a large, significant portion of that, just about everything we're getting back from the state and the city, is being returned to school budgets. So that while we're not completely there, we still have about $30 million worth of cuts that are, still at the school level, $30 million worth of cuts across schools is very different than the $90 million worth of cuts that principals first experienced weeks ago. So no, we're not completely there, but we're definitely much further along, and we are still in conversation with our unions to see what they may be able to contribute to the remaining $30 million level of cuts that schools are experiencing. So no, we're not completely there, but we're much further along.
If you're a school principal right now, should you be preparing for like three different scenarios, a scenario where there's no cuts, there's $30 million, or there is somewhere between $30 and $90 million? That's such a wide gap. I mean, how do those folks do their jobs looking forward to next year?
So one of the things that we did, and that's a great question, what we did about a week and a half ago was we asked principals to prepare. We knew we would be giving some money back to schools, so we asked principals to prepare two scenarios, a $40 million return back to school scenario and a $60 million return scenario. So for traditional schools, we were able to move to the $60 million return to schools. For charters, it looks a little different in that the services, the remainder of the money and services, they'll still get it, but they won't have to pay for those services. So actually, we had our first budget forums with principals yesterday when they learned about the higher number, and many left the central office very, very happy. It's not completely everything back, but they realized that the $60 million, we went with the higher number scenarios, and so while it's not everything, we had a number of very pleased school leaders who left the building yesterday.
So you're more optimistic today than you were last Tuesday about your capacity to retain teachers. Do you still see that there will be some teacher layoffs, that this will in fact infect the classrooms in certain places?
Yeah, one of the things that we do know when we have been reviewing, when principal supervisors and the finance and human capital teams have been reviewing school budgets, and I said this last night at our town hall, overwhelmingly principals prioritized returning classroom positions back to their schools with the additional funds. So the one thing that we do know is there will be significantly less layoffs. Nowhere near the 1,000 plus that, we were projected to experience without that. We may still have some, and that's why we're still in talks with our unions to see if there's some way of alleviating that. We'll know more once schools turn in their budgets, and of course we have to match people to positions, but given the work that's gone on the last few weeks and months, actually, we know that the number will be far less than the 1,000 plus we had anticipated. And like I said, I think that's part of why principals were generally pleased when they left the building yesterday, because overwhelmingly they were returning teaching positions back to school.
So Mayor Pugh said the other day, quoted in the Baltimore Sun, that things looked much better for now. But how long is for now last? I mean, how long is that time frame?
Well, I will say this. We've been very consistent, and the mayor has backed us on this, that we were looking for 3 years' worth of funding. I've said from the beginning we were not interested in a one-year save, and both the city and the state legislature and the governor signed off on 3 years' worth of funding, which helps to really buoy our ability to maintain a level of stability. And when I was out in the community, what I heard from parents, who want, again, a number of our parents have their young people who have their young people in city schools want to stay in city schools. They just don't want the up and down. And so what this provides us with is the ability to have some stability between now and when the new state funding formula is decided. And then, frankly, in the process of that, look at additional efficiencies. So we will be looking at further consolidation of smaller schools this year. We will be looking at how to implement our union contracts in ways that help to save, save and reduce expenses. We're looking at efficiencies. So what this does is provide us with that bridge, which we've all always called it a bridge to Kerwin, this 3 years worth of funding gives us that bridge rather than just a 1 year fix.
Well, Dr. Sondalesis, I promised that we'd let you go at 12:15, and for the first time in my life, I'm going to keep my word. So thank you very much for your time this afternoon. We look forward to checking in with you early and often as this story unfolds. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Great. No, thank you very much, and always good to talk with you, Tom.
Thank you. Dr. Sonia Sontalesis is the president and CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. Coming up after a break, more on education in Baltimore City and beyond. We're joined by Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland, the singer and producer Navasha Dea, who co-founded the Youth Resiliency Institute, the composer and performer Wendell Patrick, and Stacey Sanders, the executive director of Young Audiences Arts for Learning. We'll talk about what artists and activists are doing both in and out of the classroom. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
Of the Baltimore Boom Bap Society, working with a local public school here in Baltimore, Commodore John Rogers, down on the east side. By the way, coming up tomorrow on Midday, in 1951, doctors at Johns Hopkins Hospital took cells from a woman named Henrietta Lacks. Miss Lacks was dying of cancer, and her cells were taken without her permission, and for decades, they were used in groundbreaking medical research. Henrietta Lacks is the subject of an HBO film starring Oprah Winfrey, which is premiering later this month. Tomorrow on Midday, a conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute for Bioethics. We'll talk about the multitude of ethical issues that have arisen out of the extraordinary case of Henrietta Lacks and what protections are now in place for patients and their families. If you're just joining us today, I'm Tom Hall, and it's The Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland. We're talking about education funding and efforts by artists and activists outside local school systems who are working to engage students in a variety of ways. Sherry Parks is the Associate Dean for Research, Interdisciplinary Scholarship, and Programming at the College of Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland, College Park. Sherry, good to see you.
Hi there.
Navasha Dea is also with us here in Studio A. She's the co-founder and director of healing and performing arts for the Youth Resiliency Institute. She is also an acclaimed singer and producer. Navasha, it's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Wendell Patrick joins us on the line from Carroll Manor Elementary School in Adamstown. That's in Frederick County. He's working with students there today. He's a music producer, an educator, and the co-founder of the Baltimore Boom Bap Society. He teaches a hip-hop course at the Peabody Institute, and he is the co-creator, along with Aaron Henkin, of Out of the Blocks here on WYPR. Wendell, welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And Stacey Sanders joins us as well. She's the executive director of Young Audiences Arts for Learning, which connects schools with artists like Wendell Patrick and others around the state. Hey, Stacey, good to see you as well.
Good to see you.
So we got a full house today here, Sherry. The arts community, individual artists and arts organizations really have stepped up in this era where funding is clearly a challenge for school systems, not just in Baltimore City, but around the state.
Well, and it's not new, but as you said, they stepped it up. One of the things that we know about Baltimore that we've been told by New York and Philadelphia and L.A. and Birmingham, England specifically, is that Baltimore has more arts activism than many other cities. And so we have lots and lots of artists, but they're specifically addressing the problems on the ground.
And what can artists do as activists that other, you know, sort of just social justice activists, or I don't know how we would define other, you know, categories of activism?
Well, I mean, they've got the aesthetic experience, which is a huge instrument in terms of changing individuals, changing attitudes, changing communities. There's something, one, about just being in a room together, a shared aesthetic experience, and that emotional aspect that comes to it. But we also know that doing art, which many of these activists that we're talking to and about today, changes the person, changes the child, and teaches lots of other skills. I mean, the idea of art for art's sake is pretty new and not nearly as widespread as it is, as we think of it as.
And Wendell Patrick, you're spending the day today out in Frederick County. Your work with the Baltimore Boom Bap Society, you work with organizations like Young Audiences, Arts for Learning, and Arts Every Day. Give us a sense of what you're doing today, for example, in the classrooms with the kids out there.
So today we are having the fourth out of five residency sessions, and I'm working with second graders. And the students are learning about music production, how to create their own tracks using virtual software on Chromebooks, and we are having a wonderful time.
And do you coordinate what you're doing with the kids with their regular classroom teachers? I mean, the folks who are introducing math and English and the other subjects to them?
Yes, often we do. So this particular production workshop can be tied into lots of different curriculum elements or core elements. It can be tied into math lessons. We've done things before where music production has been tied into writing and creating pitches for businesses, creating soundscapes for stories that tie into the books that students are reading. So there are all sorts of ways to tie in artistically to the curriculum.
And Stacey Sanders, your organization has a roster of many artists like Wendell Patrick, although probably not as many or as great as Wendell Patrick, frankly. I'm a big fan of Wendell. But you send folks into schools all around the state. The budget discussions that folks have been having in Annapolis and in the city of Baltimore, how have they affected your capacity to provide this kind of arts experience for children?
We're already seeing the impact, quite honestly. City schools put a freeze on all of the principals' budgets in this current year. And what we found is that principals stopped applying for the Access for All program. The Access for All program brings artists like Wendell Patrick, dancers, actors, visual artists. We have about 100 professional artists that we bring into schools. But principals can apply for those funds and to have a performance or a residency, and they only have to contribute 20% of what it costs to bring an artist in. And the 20% has never been a financial barrier before. Young Audiences raises the rest, and actually the district, North Avenue, matches the 20%. And I think that's also in question for next year, too, which we're worried about. So typically, Young Audiences serves about 80 Baltimore City schools each year, about 33,000 students. And this year, we think we're going to serve about 12,000 less students. 12,000.
12,000. That's a lot of kids. That's Stacey Sanders. She's with Young Audiences, Arts for Learning. Sherry Parks from the University of Maryland is here. Wendell Patrick's on the phone with us from Frederick County. And Navasha Dea is here in studio. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you're a working artist who works with kids, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a parent of children who are in schools either in the city or anywhere throughout the state of Maryland, we'd like to hear what you think about the arts experiences that your children are able to access. 410-662-8780 is our number here in Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Navasha Dea, you have an organization that you co-founded with Fannin Hill called the Youth Resiliency Institute. Mm-hmm. This doesn't necessarily go into schools, but you're working in neighborhoods, mm-hmm. places like Cherry Hill and a bunch of other places here in town. Talk about the work that you all are doing.
So the Youth Resiliency was founded by myself, Fanon Hill, and two youth mentees that we had that were in foster care. And we provide services and programs for children, youth, and their families. And we're primarily in public housing in Cherry Hill, also General Cherry Hill, the community, and East Baltimore in Albemarle Square, and also East Cleveland, Ohio. So we provide resources and programming to assist the families in understanding and expressing the authentic self. So we use art as a tool for social change and for cultural remembrance and just advocating for change and being civically engaged.
And you're not, but so you, do you Are you concerned about school funding? The funding that you get, I mean, how is that related to, for example, the allocation that Governor Hogan made yesterday or the allocation that Mayor Pugh made?
Well, it affects our family. So we work with the entire family. And so we're also working in schools with the, as an aspect of, you know, family engagement. So we're not in the school rooms and classrooms, but we're working with the families and really rallying them up to advocate for the equity that the children need in regards to education, in regards to the resources, in regards to arts learning, because Cherry Hill does not have art teachers at all, actually. And so we're just dealing with a lot more issues in addition to this funding issue.
And Sherry Parks, there are a lot of schools that have no art teacher, no visual art teacher, no music teacher. So if students like the kids that Navasha and Fanon are working with in Cherry Hill, if they're not getting it in school, they have to get it from places like Youth Resiliency Institute.
And it's important to note that there's a lot of empirical evidence. This is not just intuition. There's some hard and even quantitative evidence that, that bringing arts into schools provokes other types of learning. Mm-hmm. We did a proof of concept at City Neighbors where all we did was to bring in an MFA graduate student to run a poetry workshop. And we pre- and post-tested for reading changes in writing prose scores, notice the intuitive leap, and we saw a 5% change every semester. There are lots of studies nationally mm-hmm. that we're not only taking away art from kids, we're taking away one of the most natural and fundamental ways of learning about life. And if you think about what Navasha was saying, that type of self-reflection mm-hmm. doesn't happen almost anywhere else in the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And Wendell Patrick, when you're working with kids, it would seem to me that, you know, if they show up to school one day and then all of a sudden this really cool guy like Wendell Patrick shows up, I mean, chances are you might be slightly hipper than their teacher that they're used to having every day. And no offense to the teachers. But, I mean, so just the fact that you're there mm-hmm. and the fact that they get to hang with you for a day on repeated occasions has probably, I mean, just that alone is probably, you know, a really huge boost to them. I'm guessing here, but do you find that in your experience?
I mean, I think it's really helpful. You know, truth be told, I do actually get to work with some pretty hip teachers. Yeah, you know, I was at a school just a couple of days ago, a different school, working with fourth graders, and I worked with at the same school with fourth graders last year. They're currently in fifth grade. And, you know, when I'm walking down the hall, all of the fifth graders, you know, they completely light up. They're all giving me high fives and telling me, you know, how much they've used what I taught them last year over the course of this year. So it really does make a difference. And a large part of why I do this work is because I still remember people that came to my school during a time when, you know, arts funding or funding for arts in schools was more prominent than it is now. And, you know, it made a big enough impact on me that I still remember. And I think it's very important, and the impact is undeniable.
Stacey Sanders of Young Audiences.
Yeah, I think what Wendell is saying is perfect. We really have a philosophy at Young Audiences and with our artists is that that our artists help students and the artistic process helps students feel visible in the school. And it gives them, it nurtures a sense that they matter. And on top of that, when we integrate the arts into the teaching of other subjects, it makes the content matter and more relevant. And when you make students feel like they matter and you make the content matter, that's how you can transform the learning environment. And, you know, this is what makes me concerned about the situation that our schools are in. So in addition to being the executive director of Young Audiences, I'm also the parent of two city school children. And so I'm seeing how devastating the potential cuts are on our principal, on our teachers, and on our families. And the thing about it is even if we close this gap, it's not going to make the schools whole. We need to change that baseline. The ACLU adequacy funding showed that, you know, there are millions more dollars that we should be investing into our school system and into our children. And I think, you know, Dr. Santelisa has said, you know what, our state, our city needs to determine if we are going to make public education a priority. And, you know, we have principals with just even last year before this budget gap, we're having to make decisions about whether to have an assistant principal or a music teacher. We should not be forcing our principals to make these choices that are bad for children.
Sherry Parks.
I wanted to go back to what Stacey said about mattering, because as part of Baltimore Stories, which is a project that I've run in Baltimore, we went to the Barclay School and we asked upper elementary and middle school kids, what is the Baltimore you would like to live in? Basically, utopian Baltimore. And we brought in two graduate students from MICA to paint, Ben and Justin. And they went away and came back with paintings. And we just went back this week and showed the paintings to the kids. They had created, the kids had imagined a homeless shelter. And they had put, this was the happiest homeless shelter. I mean, there was cooking and dancing and eating and all the things. And then they decided that the community should be in there. And they were honored. And they said they were, the kids said that they were happy, that they were inspired by seeing the paintings. And in the end, they decided that we should forward the photographs, because the paintings are going to stay with them in the school, to Baltimore Urban Planners. And so that idea of mattering because of creation is really important.
It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you want to join our conversation about the arts and activism in Maryland schools, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So, Navasha Dea, it seems to me that this also yet again lays bare the dichotomy and the racial division that we have in our city and throughout our state, because in middle-class, largely white neighborhoods, if for whatever reason in their school system they're not getting arts experiences, then those parents have the capacity to pay for their kid to take ballet lessons, or their kid to sing in a children's chorus, or their kid to take art lessons at the Walters Art Museum during the summer. There are a lot of the folks in Cherry Hill and other places with whom you're working that don't have that capacity. And this is, it seems to me that arts, the arts and activism could be a field leveler, you know? I mean, all kids are creative. All kids, you know, have an instinct and an impulse for arts. But are the parents in Cherry Hill, you know, advocating? Are they raising, you know, what about the paucity of arts or offerings in the in their local schools?
Yes, and we're continuing to organize parents in Cherry Hill, and to augment the work that's already in the schools. We do have one teacher. I remiss to say, at New Era, there is a music teacher, an instrumental teacher, who teaches piano and guitar, and we augment that work. I had a summer choir there, so we're supporting the principals and the teachers there by offering arts education in the community. The parents, I mean, when you're beat down on for so long, you get really you can be discouraged. So with the Youth Resiliency Institute, we empower, and not empower because we can't empower anybody, but we just inspire and encourage and support the parents and the families to advocate for their children in the community and in the schools. And so we do have a lot of fighters. We have a lot of activists in Cherry Hill who are advocating, who are going to those meetings downtown, and we just continue to organize. And our work speaks to that work. So we're using arts to really organize everyone. And also, when you understand that you have these children who are talented, which we discover in our programming all the time, the parents are realizing, like, oh, you know, we really need to really support these children. Where are these programs in our schools? So we have been working with the families and the children, the whole family, but the parents, to advocate and to really discover the brilliance in their children, in that community. And we do that through the film that we have, the Lumnava Love, highlighting Shirley Folks, who's a great organizer in Cherry Hill, and advocating for Black families nationwide. And then also we're producing a Cherry Hill Arts Festival this summer in partnership with leaders in Cherry Hill, along with Rex and Parks and other partners, to really revitalize that community and to showcase it, to promote the brilliance that's in that community.
And the other thing, and I think this is, what I was talking about regarding Wendell's work in schools. I mean, you, Navasha, in your other life, besides the organizing that you're doing with Youth Resiliency Institute, you're singing all over the world. I mean, you are an acclaimed soul singer, an artist who performs with some names that, very much bold-faced names that folks know about. You sang with Sweet Honey in the Rock for a while. You've done a whole bunch of different stuff. So the excellence matters, too. I mean, the fact that these kids have a chance to work with an artist like you, who is not some, well-meaning amateur, but in fact a professional in the realm of arts. That matters. And if they didn't get a chance to work with you, those kids in Cherry Hill would have nothing.
Exactly. And that's why we're there. Fanon and I, we went, Fanon met Mama Shirley Folks in 2008 and then brought me in 2010. And when I went there to see her program, it was no ball, no book. And I was so obsessed. So I started teaching. My degree is in music education. And I did arts and residence throughout the city through the years. But I went in there, started teaching notation, songs, chants, avocation, and just, you know, affirmation, excuse me. And from that, we realized and we dreamed big and we were able to do year-long programming with startup funding from different organizations, including the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, and as well as Deutsch Foundation, who helped with kind of moving forward this work that we're doing year long with a festival. And we have brought like named artists like India Davenport into Cherry Hill to meet with the families, in addition to doing a programming at UB Blake with her performing and me performing and things like that. So with the festival and with the things we're doing, I bring in professional artists along with myself to work with the families, visual artists, singers, dancers, you know, all the different arts in the community to touch so that the families can see you and touch you. I mean, I did not reveal that I was a professional artist for many years to the families there. They just realized it 3 years ago and they were like, oh, Ms. Navajo, you can really sing. So I didn't really tell them, but I was still giving what I have and also organizing the programming and coordinating.
And Wendell Patrick, some folks look at this and they say, you know, there's just nothing wrong with dance and music and visual arts. It's lovely, but golly gosh, the test scores in our schools are terrible. And these kids need to do better in the so-called STEM subjects. And if you're a principal, you know, your job is on the line unless these numbers come up and the kids can show that they can add and the kids can show that they can read and comprehend. When you talk to principals like the one in Adamstown in the school you're working in today, I mean, are they reluctant to say, you know, any minute that we have these kids out of math class or out of English class is a risk? I mean, are they nervous about that, about, you know, allocating time in the children's day for the kind of work that you're doing?
Well, you know, I think, as Stacy said, you know, it's important to help people to understand, educators in particular and principals, that we're not trying to bring in arts as an alternative to other things, but rather in a way to help students actually improve at all of those things that you just mentioned. And, you know, at the end of the day, I do think that for the most part, everybody wants what's best for children, but people who aren't artists sometimes have a difficult time understanding how something like art can benefit these other subjects. And so what I found is that over the years, there are many schools that I've been to where there was some reluctance at first, but then I've been asked to come back repeatedly. And not only that, but then I hear about other artists, musicians, actors, writers that I know, poets, that have also been asked to come to those same schools because they really recognize what the benefits are. 2 years ago, I was at Booker T. Washington working with some students in a remedial reading class. And you know, helping to create a soundscape for the books that they were reading, and it was incredible watching the students, their eyes light up as it helped to create these visual images in their mind of what they were reading, and you know, what I discovered, which was a huge issue for me, was that the classroom only had one book for the teacher, and that the students didn't have any books that they could take home. And so, you know, we talk about how, you know, a lot of principals and teachers feel as though they don't want to have any time taken away from these subjects, but yet often the issue is that the materials that the students need for the subjects actually aren't even there, aren't even in place.
Yeah.
And in a situation like that, I was able to bring in what I do, and you could immediately see over the course of several days how much it actually helped them, their reading comprehension. So I think that the problem is more complicated than you know, many people think, but it definitely is not an issue of artists coming into schools and taking time away from opportunities to advance and excel in these other subject matters.
All right, I've got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more with Wendell Patrick. He's a music producer, a pianist, a photographer, an educator, and the co-founder of the Baltimore Boom Bap Society. He joins us from Adamstown in Frederick County today. Stacy Sanders is the executive director of Young Audiences Arts for Learning. Navasha Dea is a singer-songwriter and activist and the co-founder and director of Healing and Performing Arts for the Youth Resiliency Institute. It's Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. She's the associate dean for research interdisciplinary scholarship and programming at the College of Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland College Park. We'll have more when we return. 410-662-8780 is our phone number, our email address, midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. This is more music from Wendell Patrick when he did work with a group of elementary students at Commodore John Rogers School in East Baltimore. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
The Soweto 76, that's a Baltimore-based youth ensemble under the tutelage of one of our guests this afternoon, Navasha Dea. They are singing the South African National Anthem. If you've just joined us, it's Culture Connections, our monthly series with Dr. Sherry Parks, the Associate Dean for Research, Interdisciplinary Scholarship and Programming at the College of Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland in College Park, where she's also an Associate Professor in the Department of American Studies. She's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. Navasha Dea is the co-founder and director of Healing and Performing Arts for the Youth Resiliency Institute. Stacey Sanders is the executive director of Young Audiences Arts for Learning, based here in Baltimore. And Wendell Patrick's on the phone from Frederick County. He's a music producer, a pianist, a photographer, an educator, and co-founder of the Baltimore Boom Bap Society. He also teaches a course on hip-hop at the Peabody Institute, the first in the country, and he's the co-creator of Out of the Blocks, the award-winning series on WYPR that he produces with Aaron Henkin. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones in Baltimore. Michael, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Yes, hi. My name is Michael, and I'm one of the founder parents of Roots and Branches Charter School. And we, in our charter, believe a lot in arts integration, and it's just a great way for people to really, or the students to really have fun and remember things. And to give an example, like if you're trying to teach the clouds, like the levels of clouds from cumulus, stratus to cirrus, we did a dance routine where they would invent moves for like lower energy to middle energy to high energy to illustrate the different clouds. The students came up with those movements. And so they not only had fun doing it, but I'm sure they had a better shot at remembering about those different layers of clouds. So I thought maybe your guest could speak a little bit about, you know, the beauty of arts integration and how that should be part of the curriculum.
All right, Stacey Sanders, arts integration, certainly a big animating force behind your work at Young Audiences Arts for Learning.
It absolutely is. And I totally agree with what you're saying. You know, I think that, you know, your faculty, you know, has known for a long time that arts integration helps kids learn better by engaging them and getting concepts and information to stick. But we've had limited objective data to support this belief. And so we're really excited that two studies have come out that show that kids in Baltimore City, elementary school kids who participated in a summer learning program where teaching artists like Wendell and city school teachers were collaboratively teaching literacy and math every day for 5 weeks, students in that program reduced their summer learning loss by 2/3 in literacy, and we completely eliminated summer learning loss in math, and in fact sent our kids back to school ahead. And Navasha and I were laughing during the break because we're like, this is just how you taught a long time ago, and it's just coming back to common sense teaching and what is good for our kids. But I think because of the way our principals and teachers are evaluated, because of what is measured and assessed, growth in literacy and math matters. But finally, we have results tied to standardized tests that show when you teach through the arts, when you really leverage the talent of the artists who are living in our communities, you can transform learning, and we can help our kids who are far behind to catch up. And so I think that the new studies that are out can help us not only re-envision summer learning, which is where a huge driver of the achievement gap comes from, is summer learning, but really in re-envision what our school should look like during the school day. And that totally aligns with Dr. Santelisa's vision, because her number one priority is about addressing the whole child. And this is what I think we're all about.
Mm-hmm. Sherry Parks, there's no shortage of data, really. There's no shortage of evidence. But there is a huge shortage of people in positions of power over school systems, not just here in Maryland, but across the country. There's a paucity of embrace of this data, isn't there?
Well, and I mean, in addition to the macro level studies that Stacey's talking about, there are smaller psychological studies. So we know how this works. These are the same skills. I mean, you said math and music. Math and music actually use the same parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. And so when you exercise one, you're exercising the other. I think Michael explained it when he said beauty. I think we often think that beauty is is superfluous, that we don't need it in our lives. And we often have the stereotype that the arts are only emotion. There's not intelligence at work. And that those cognitive skills that one learns very rapidly, children actually learn faster when you integrate art. Mm-hmm. So it's actually pretty cost efficient, effective. Mm-hmm. It's a message that isn't getting, but I think often people lose that. What I do know is that my mother was a school teacher, and she had to learn. Back then, teachers had to learn to play the piano. Mm-hmm. And they had to learn because, you know, they would be teaching something and then they would break into song, and children learned. Stacey's right. This is something we've known and lost. And I'll get myself in trouble. As education has become more of an industry, this has been dropped out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and again, Wendell, I'm sorry. You wanted to chime in?
Oh, yeah, I did. I just wanted to say, just to the point of, you know, Stacey and Navasha, well, really, that everybody's making about, you know, that's how we used to teach. About 15 minutes ago, I actually posted currently discussing arts and education on Tom Hall's Midday on WIPR, and I actually got a comment here that says, "You're in Adamstown. That's where I grew up and went to Carroll Manor Elementary, which is where I am right now. The art teachers there 35 years ago had a major impact on my life."
You know, I appreciate your sharing that comment with us. You know, I've been a performing artist for 40 years. I was on the roster with the Choral Arts Society of Young Audiences. I have played hundreds of Kaffa Jima auditoriums in my life. You know, and there's no, I mean, everybody in the arts community and the milieu in which I've hung out with, and the milieu in which all of you guys hang out, it is totally convinced. We're preaching to the choir when we talk to this kind of audience. But what's it going to take for this data to translate into actual policy? Because the very first thing, every single time, for years and years and years, when there's a money problem, well, let's get rid of the music teacher. Let's get rid of the art teacher. I mean, it's still happening. It's no different than it was in 1970 or 1980 or 1990. I mean, this is an endemic issue. What tips the scale?
Well, they have to see it. One of the things that happened at Arts Every Day Symposium is that the principal of Commodore, John Rogers School, was there, and he stood up and said, "I have invested in music." And those are the children that you're hearing performing with Wendell. He said, "I have seen it now. I have seen what this does to the children and how it helps the curriculum." And so they have to see it.
I totally agree with that. And to that point, I think North Avenue, Baltimore City School, sees that as well. They know that principals determine whether or not students have access. And actually, they are launching a principal training program in partnership with Young Audiences called Creative Collaborations for School Improvement. And what we found in a survey that was done about 10 years ago is that if a principal grew up not utilizing the museums or going into the theater either as part of their education or their home life, they were less likely to create those opportunities for their kids. So as part of this training program, principals are going to go around our city, go into our institutions, hear what those institutions have have to offer in terms of enriching opportunities for their kids, and we're going to connect them to the research. So principals matter, and we need to get this research. We need to give them the opportunity to experience the beauty and the mattering, right?
Yeah, and that governors matter, too, and mayors matter.
Yeah, well, let's have the governor participate.
And members of Congress matter. And the other thing that matters, Navasha, is the work that you and Wendell do impresses and inspires me because it's about self-expression. Mm-hmm. And self-expression is really important in communities like Cherry Hill mm-hmm. and on the East Side. Mm-hmm. When folks and the students and their parents and their grandparents have lived lives where marginalization is the norm. Mm-hmm. And when you're marginalized, it's even more important to have a vehicle in which you can say, this is what I'm about. You got this movie that you mm-hmm. made with these kids and with these families. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really matters a lot, too, the fact that they have a place to say, this is who I am.
Yeah, and they're speaking for themselves, which is a big part of the movie and the panel that happens, because most people in public housing, you don't hear their voice. You hear someone, you know, academically speaking for them and maybe, you know, reporting and things like that. Another aspect I want to share was that, you know, there's an elder from Dagar people. His name is Maladoma Somme, and he said they didn't really have a word for musician and artist. The closest word is healer. And so I know you talked about my title. And as a person that understood that from childhood, understanding the purpose of the arts.
Yeah, you're the director of healing
and performing arts. Yes. And just understanding that in a holistic way, in our work, we approach it that way. We do culturally relevant work. We deal with the culture of the people we're working with. If we're working with Mexicans, then we're dealing with Mexican culture. We're working with Asian or Japanese, we're dealing with that. And then we're dealing with Black families, so we're dealing with African-American culture, African culture. And the work that we do is dealing with healing trauma. So you have trauma through racism, trauma through being poor, you know, and these things are, you know, devised on purpose. We're in Baltimore City, which is over 60% Black. So when we're dealing with an equity issue, as we're dealing with lack of funding, lack of support, and that has to be at the table all the time. There are people who do not like Black people. There are people who do not like poor people. And so you're hit two times if you're a poor Black person, and that has to be addressed. So when we're dealing with policy, we're still dealing with racism, we're still dealing with equity. And so if we don't put that at the table in that language, and people hide behind changing policy and laws and not really admitting to their partial preference of people, then we're dealing with something really serious. We're dealing with people being fully human. And in our work that we do have work that works with different cultures. We had a festival downtown in partnership with Downtown Partnerships called the Youth Arts Harvest Festival, work with children in different cultures. So if you don't know who you are, and we're advocating for people to know who they are mm-hmm. so they can love other people. So
Wendell Patrick, we're running out of time. I've got 30 seconds left, but I do want to touch on the fact that you're now teaching a course in hip-hop at a classical music conservatory, Peabody. So those kids are going to leave with a degree in music or music education, and they're going to know something about hip-hop culture. They're going to know something about producing hip-hop art. One would hope that that would find its way into the classrooms that those young teachers will find themselves in.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything that we do ultimately has a lasting impact beyond what, you know, what we envision. I grew up loving and really being a student of hip-hop without studying it in a school. So to be able to, you know, see it sort of not come full circle, but move far enough forward that I can actually now go into a conservatory and teach this material to students that are really interested is wonderful.
Very cool. All right, that's all the time we have. I appreciate all of you being here today for this really good conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Sherry Parks is an Associate Dean for Research, Interdisciplinary Scholarship and Programming at the College of Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland College Park. She's also an Associate Professor in the Department of American Studies and the author of a terrific book, Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. And she joins us every month for Culture Connections here on Midday. Stacey Sanders is the Executive Director of Young Audiences Arts for Learning. Navasha Dea is the co-founder and director of Healing and Performing Arts for the Youth Resiliency Institute. She's also a terrific singer, songwriter, producer, and activist. And on Saturday, there's a screening of her documentary, Lum Nava Love, at the Pillar Worship Center on South Duklin Street at 2 o'clock. Navasha recorded an original soundtrack for that film. Wendell Patrick is, among other things, the co-founder of the Baltimore Boom Bap Society. He's also the co-producer of WIPR's Out of the Blocks with Aaron Henkin. Tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock, Wendell will be presenting at the EduLab at Light City. That event is being held at the IMET on Pratt Street. And tomorrow night at 9:30, the Baltimore Boom Bap Society will do a session at the Windup Space in Station North. We've got a link to information about the work that all of our guests are doing. Come to WIPR.org/midday. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about Henrietta Lacks, a woman whose life is the subject of an HBO film starring Oprah Winfrey that premieres later this month. Miss Lacks was a cancer patient whose cells were collected by Johns Hopkins researchers without her knowledge. Research using her cells led to medical breakthroughs like the polio vaccine and chemotherapy. Bioethicist Dr. Jeffrey Kahn joins us to talk about the ethical implications of her extraordinary story. I'd like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today for our guests. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day and enjoy this music by Navasha Deya.